Valet? Dominic. Thisbe sat up stiff. They threatened you? No, it was a friendly warning. Dominic's a black law too, and mad possessive, and already has it in for me for edging in on the privilege of polishing TM's boots and changing their sheets and all that. TM says they want Dominic for more important work than housekeeping, but it's an old fight between the pair that'll probably never finish. I try not to get involved. But if I'm muscled in on sensory business with TM too, then even money says I'd wake up dead. J.E.D.D. Mason Sensair is also their valet, and are they? Carlyle took a forkful of strudel, hoping to keep himself from asking something rash. The strudel, he remembers, was exquisite, but sweetness on the tongue cannot drive gall from the mind. Excuse me, where did you say your bathroom was?
Second on the left.
From here, I have less detail, for Thisbe and Chagatai do a poor job reconstructing scenes. Thisbe asked Chagatai if J.E.D.D. Mason had any hobbies or interests apart from work and messing with people's theology. Chagatai answered that J.E.D.D. Mason's most common activities, at least at home, were reading, conducting business over his tracker, sitting perfectly still doing nothing, and the all-time favorite, lying perfectly still doing nothing.
Sleeping? She suggested.
Sometimes, the black law answered. Often not. Meanwhile, in the bland but tasteful bathroom, Carlyle, in a rare moment of lie becoming truth, filed a quick report to the Sensei's conclave of his deep concerns regarding Dominic Seneschal. Then, cleansed by the feeling of good action, he searched the house. He reviewed the Hall of Icons first, then the sitting room, with its fireplace, sofas, and coffee table, all wood and silk and ornament to thrill an antiquarian, but with a starkness to it. A showroom, not a room for living. In the library, he caught the two students admiring a spider they had trapped under a cup, and in the back room, he heard sweet things about me from the grateful rescued young thing. Sometimes we servicers retain old business from our dark days, reader, and sometimes we help each other solve it. Chakotay's bedroom was easy to spot by its stacks of cookbooks and tomorrow's suit ready to go, and the guest bedrooms were clear by their suitcases. That left only one door to try. There you are. Thisbe appeared behind Carlyle just as he opened it. I told Chagatai we needed to head out. I'm on duty soon. Did you have a good snoop? Carlyle stood frozen, staring, unable to release the knob.
Their bedroom.
What?
This is J.E.D.D. Mason's bedroom.
Carlyle pulled the door back. A mattress with plain sheets lay on the floor without blanket, pillow, or bed frame. The closet door ajar revealed six shirts on hangers, the antique black he always wore, and nothing more.
That's kind of scary, Thisbe admitted, checking the empty drawers.
Though it's less scary knowing they don't really live here. Carlyle stared in silence for some moments.
No. The rest of the rooms are comfortable, guest-ready. This has to be their preference.
They thought on that for some moments before Thisbe turned dark eyes again on the Sensair.
I could tell you almost lost it over what they said about Dominic.
Carlyle flinched. Sensair and valet, and possessive, and probably a boshmate too, or worse. All the earmarks of unhealthy. It would be scary anywhere, but so close to major powers, a cult could be the kind of disaster we're most afraid of. J.E.D.D. Mason has access to the Emperor, to Ando, to everything.
Thisbe gave a long frown.
You're right to be worried. And you're right that it's a first law issue, but the danger of a cult is a lot more long-term than the danger of 800 million cars all shutting down tomorrow. And also a lot less important than what threat this might pose to a certain kid. My questions trump yours. And you need to stay calm so I can keep coaxing out the answers we're really here for. You jump on the conversation like that again, and I'll send you home and go to Paris on my own. Understood? Objections parted his lips, but stopped there. Yes, you're right. Are you ready to go back in there? I'm sure I can coast on this bluff a while longer, but you look like you're struggling. I'm fine, Carlyle resolved. I'll stay. Though this Blacklaw's main feature seems to be knowing as little as possible about J.E.D.D. Mason's family and political life, should we move on toward Paris before someone catches us here? She considered, but shook her head, black hair flowing like oil. I want to see if this roast really can lure in that Dominic. Plus, our chef says there's a step coming up which we can eat. Not the final thing, but an intermediate thing that involves almonds and smells incredible. The growl of Carlyle's tummy decided for him. Excellent. One thing. She stopped him in the doorway. After I'm done and satisfied with my investigation, then you report this to the Sensei's conclave, not before. I don't want people getting poked and clamming up, not with so much at risk. Carlyle winced as he described this part. Of course, Thisbe. You have my word. It is possible to delete reports sent to the conclave. It is not possible, amid the many lies, to be certain quite when it was deleted, or who saw it first. Chapter the 20th. A Monster in the House. Gunfire could not have spooked me so completely as Bridger's silence when I called to check on him after my hours in the censor's office. Knight's westward march had advanced from Togyankyo as far as Europe, and I had been ordered to get some hours' sleep, but it did not occur to me that I was sacrificing something as I lied my way into a car. Bridger did not answer. The Major did not answer. No one answered for that agonizing hour's flight across the unyielding Atlantic. Fears drowned me so completely I did not even mark when midnight touched Western Europe and sent the 710 lists free into the world. I did not call Thisbe. I almost did. But what if it was something with her bosh? The thief again? Or the opposite? Police? Those were my justifications. Really, I think I was angry at Thisbe, forcing out what I had hidden so long, my Tocqueville. It was the kind of anger we create to mask our guilt. The cave was dark, but I found Bridger in Thisbe's bedroom, huddling as a caged rat huddles in a sterile corner, praying in its tiny mind for some rag or a scrap of newspaper to hide beneath. My arms were Bridger's rag, and he hurled himself into their sanctuary hard enough to wind me. They were inside! Mycroft, they were inside. Who? Who was inside? Inside what? I leaned against Thisbe's bed so the boy's weight would not topple me. He smelled of the sea, salt and sun, good things to come between these shadows. In my cave. They went through and through everything everywhere and broke the dollhouse and knocked Mama Doll's kitchen over and turned Boo's bed upside down. Boo, too, jumped on me. Frantic as dogs get when they sense panic but have nothing to growl at. Is anyone hurt? Was anyone seen? I asked. Mama Doll got hurt. Mama Doll got a heavy box thrown on them and was stuck there pretending to be just a doll for an hour. Mycroft, an hour! He opened his arms just enough for me to see her cradled there, her blonde curls mussed by the crook of his elbow. I'm fine, honey, she reassured, her smile never dimming. It just twisted my shoulder a little bit. I'm fine. The important thing is that you weren't there. You weren't there?
I repeated as I stroked his hair. I went swimming on the beach. Mamadol was all alone with just a couple soldiers on watch. I hugged him as tightly as I could without smothering the doll in his arms. It's all right now, but I'm here. I'll take care of it. Whatever happens, so long as you're not hurt, I can take care of it, I promise. I wiped his tears with my fingers, and he granted me a smile. What happened to your tracker? I left it while I went to swim. He saw the silent scolding on my face. I know, but the Major says I shouldn't turn it on again. The bad guy did something to it. The men on watch saw. The Major's right. I held the child gently, feeling his trembling subside, but I did have to ask, was it Dominic Seneschal? The Major answered, seated with his man on a set of dice on the bedside table, just the right size to serve as stools. Blacklaw, late 20s, Sensei's scarf, antique French men's costume, light skin, brown hair tied back, moves like a monster. Dominic must have found something in this room when they searched before. I gave Bridger's shoulder a squeeze. Was anything sitting out in the cave that was obviously miracled? Did Dominic take anything? Anything you'd made? I was packing, sobs resurged. I was packing like you said, just the important things, and they took my backpack. It was full. It had my drawings and my red shirt and my Robin Hood book and the ammunition, all the army men's ammunition, and Mamadol's best little frying pan. You remember the one you got her that's just the right size? We can get another one, sweetheart, she reassured. My mind inventoried what else the backpack must contain. Hair. Fingerprints. The ammunition, was it already miracled? Bridger sniffed. It wasn't miracled yet. Just lots of little paper guns and boxes and some paper healing potion tubes. I made some ahead of time, so I'll be ready. I even have some in my pocket, see? His trembling hand produced the now crushed paper tube, already labeled. What about the resurrection potion you made for Private Pointer? I have that safe in my shoe. But the no-no box. They took the no-no box. Thisbe's voice rose behind me, as soft and sweet and threatening as I had ever heard it. What's the no-no box? I turned to find her on the threshold, the click of her boots cold as the clatter of old bones. Instinct made me clutch the boy more tightly. That doesn't matter right now. More secrets? She slipped off her fine jacket and set down the parcel of leftovers I did not yet realize was from Chagatai. We were hunting Dominic Seneschal ourselves when we got the bleep that Bridger had come in here. I didn't know you were here, though. Slipped our tracker again, have we? I cursed, spotting wide-eyed Carlyle behind her. The shadow of my hat would have been enough to conceal the absence of the tracker at my ear, but not now. Bridger isn't up to dealing with you in one of your moods right now, Thisbe, I warned. Take a minute to relax and take your boots off. Why was Bridger packing? She stepped toward me, enjoying the unease each step instilled. You weren't going to spirit Bridger off to J.E.D.D. Mason without telling us, were you? I helped Bridger sit beside me on the bed so I could shield him from her glare. Not to J.E.D.D. Mason, but this area isn't safe anymore. Not with this investigation. I have a safe house ready. So you run and leave me in the hot seat? No, don't lie to me, Mycroft. You were trying to take Bridger off somewhere and hide them from me. I found myself wondering why I was so frightened as the witch loomed close. Was it pathological? She seemed a witch to me in all senses then. A good witch, bad witch, weaver of curses, stalker of children, solver of problems, healer, black widow, conjurer, the devil's whore who chews through mortal mates, an old maid too, young but on course to bloom into that unmarried, ungrounded, uncontrolled old crone, which drove past societies to purge with fire or bind in nunneries those thorny women wedlock could not hold. I had come to her with Bridger years ago, just as a village girl might have, desperate to conceal a child born out of wedlock, turning to the midwife who is something more than midwife after dark.